Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 18. The residents of Jambudweep offer prayers. Text 28. Translation. O Almighty Lord, at the end of the millennium, this planet Earth, which is the source of all kinds of herbs, drugs, and trees, was inundated by water and drowned beneath the devastating waves. At that time, you protected me along with the earth and roamed the sea with great speed. O unborn one, you are the actual maintainer of the entire universal creation, and therefore you are the cause of all living entities. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. Envious persons cannot appreciate how wonderfully the Lord creates, maintains, and annihilates the universe. But devotees of the Lord can understand this perfectly well. Devotees can see how the Lord is acting behind the wonderful workings of the material nature. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sat characharam hetunanena konteya jagat viparivartate. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. All the wonderful transformations of nature are happening under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Envious persons cannot see this, but a devotee, even though very humble and even if uneducated, knows that behind all the activities of nature is the supreme hand of the Supreme Being. Om Ganatimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. In this chapter, you are hearing how residents of different parts of the universe offer prayers. These parts of the universe described are not all within the realm of our sense perception. So you are dealing with things that are outside the verification of current science. Why should we simply have a problem accepting the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when even material things are so far beyond us? This particular Varsha, Ramyaka Varsha, is ruled by Vaivashvata Manu, the Varsha spoken about in this series of verses. He's describing Matsya Avatar, Lord Matsya Dev, who comes right near the beginning of creation, and also he comes at the end of a particular period of Manu. Actually, this universe is so vast that even such details as is there a cosmic annihilation at the end of every day of Brahma, or the cosmic annihilation that Vaivashvata Manu in his previous birth experienced, maybe it was like a dream. The acharyas, they discuss points like that. The details of this universe are so far beyond human comprehension. And this universe is so vast that you can discuss points like that, which are actually very minor, considering the whole span of the cosmos. We are humbled by this information. Actually, in terms of the material point of view, our life is very insignificant. But we take it, our material life, to be so significant and so all-important. we're saturated with material desires, which we feel are necessary to be fulfilled. There's no doubt about it. I have desires. They must be fulfilled. I'm alive. Therefore, I have things that I need to do, things I need to achieve. The world must go my way at least a good percentage of the time. We are surcharged with that mission, when actually, in the vast cosmos, we're so tiny and so unimportant. In devotional service, we achieve our real importance. Yet a real devotee, even from the devotional standpoint, considers himself or herself to be very tiny. So when is it that we'll ever be the big deal that we think we are? That is the question. When will that day come when we'll actually be so great as we think we are? Actually, from the material point of view, that day will never come. And from the spiritual point of view, that day will never come. So we might as well get over it. Now, hearing this information, which is beyond our material verification, you're hearing about other Varshas, the residents of Jambudweep, you're hearing about Vaivashvatamanu. Let's go over, briefly, the history of Vaivashvatamanu. You know him from Bhagavad Gita, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavana Hamavyam. So, he was Satyavrata during the Chakshusha Manvantara, a previous monarch. And then, at the end of his period of being Manu, there was a cosmic annihilation. And Lord Matsyadeva appeared. Lord Matsyadeva enlightened Satyavrata and the sages from within the core of their hearts. It's interesting how the distribution of transcendental knowledge is always going on. How did it happen this time? While Lord Matsyadeva was swimming through the waters of the cosmic annihilation with great speed, he was speaking transcendental knowledge through the heart of Satyavrata and sages who were in a boat to protect them. How the Lord distributes transcendental knowledge varies from time to time, but it's always happening. So there's no reason for conditioned souls to complain that if God created us, what he did then was leave us in this world and abandon us. The jivas are being maintained spiritually and materially, yet they don't see this. They don't see it because they don't want to see. As soon as you recognize you're being maintained by someone, that means dependency. And the purpose of conditioned life is to be independent, not to be dependent. So therefore, the last thing you want to acknowledge is your dependent relationship for your maintenance. So therefore, in order to fully live the dream of material existence, we have to push ahead thinking, maintenance depends on me, pleasure depends on me, my ability to fight distress, it all depends on me. And in this way, our ego assumes monstrous proportions, and we think we are so big, we think we are so important, and in this way, we proceed from one birth to another in different species of life. We can rebel against this information in the fifth canto about the residents of Jambudweep, about the different Varshas, about even Lord Matsyadeva, the fish incarnation of the Lord. You can imagine telling your material associates, if you have any, at your school, at your workplace, relatives, this morning in church we heard about the fish incarnation. Who spoke transcendental knowledge to the into the core of the hearts while he was having fun, literally surfing through the waves of the cosmic annihilation. When you think about it, in terms of our situation in material understanding, what does the conditioned soul actually understand? For example, look at the political and economic situation of the USA. Who can actually understand it? The financial situation is so complex. It's made that way so that those who are on top of the game can literally cheat, and the common man can figure it out. All these complex financial derivatives. And even if you could figure it out, what can you do about it? The banking industry in the U.S. state spends $1 million a day lobbying in Washington, D.C. $1 million a day. So even if you could understand the system, what can you do? So financially, you can't understand what's going on. Politically, you can barely understand what's going on. Yet when we hear the information from the fifth canto, we say, oh, this is beyond my understanding. How can I accept this? Things are happening all day long in terms of your material life that are outside of your control, outside of your ability to grasp. Yet you think, oh, well, it's all acceptable. Someone knows what's going on. You know, the Secretary of the Treasury knows what's going on. Or someone, does the President know what's going on? Or someone must know what's going on. There's a new bumper sticker appearing in the USA, I've seen. It's called, "Trust me, I'm your banker." It's actually a very insightful statement about conditioned life, because the average man doesn't understand at all. As we said, the financial system is so complex. So why, then, do we have a little bit of an attitude about hearing inconceivable information in the Bhagavatam? It can only be attributed, this attitude can only be attributed to envy. You don't want to acknowledge dependency. You don't want to acknowledge that there is a supreme controller who does things his way. Therefore, Prabhupada explains in the purport, envious persons cannot appreciate how wonderfully the Lord creates, maintains, and annihilates the universe. But devotees of the Lord can understand this perfectly well. This means that actually to understand things properly, even something as material maintenance of the universe, you need to have the right attitude. So this is the difference between understanding in Bhagavad Dharma and understanding according to the material point of view. Understanding the science of Bhagavatam means you have to have the right attitude. So the Bhagavatam seeks to develop in you the proper attitude or state of consciousness so that then you can appreciate what's going on. Whereas according to the Western materialistic understanding, what does your attitude have to do with anything? What does your state of consciousness have to do with anything? Just enter the laboratory, enter the classroom, and all knowledge is at your fingertips. This is Maya. Without the right attitude, you can't understand. This is the Bhagavatam position. Change your attitude, change your state of consciousness, and then you can understand. In other words, knowledge is state-specific. According to your state of consciousness, that determines how much you can grasp. Therefore, we need purification, because without purification, we are simply seeing through all our impurities. So this is the major difference. And this is the divide that can't be erased between the materialistic approach to understanding and the bhakti approach to understanding. Krishna plainly says, bhakjamam abhijanati. Only by bhakti can I be understood. Bhakti is an attitude. Now, some people will dismiss that as, well, you have your attitude, I have my attitude, but what about the facts? Attitude is one thing. The facts are another thing. But it doesn't work like that. Bhagavatam will go through great effort to explain to you that your attitude allows you to see certain things as facts and not see other things as facts. And therefore, Prabhupada says, envious persons can't appreciate how the Lord creates, maintains, and annihilates the universe. So some people will say, well, this is just some kind of Hindu folklore or mythology. What is whether you feel inclined to accept the existence of supreme authority or not? What does it have to do with your ability to understand how to live in this world? Let's separate the facts from your emotions and your state of consciousness. That's impossible. As one famous comedian, I don't think he's alive anymore, Jimmy Durante said, revealing the problem with attitude and facts, he said, my mind's made up. Don't try to confuse me with the facts. In other words, I've got a particular state of consciousness, so therefore don't try to confuse me with other things. So the Bhagavatam recognizes that point of view. It is actually the reality that according to your consciousness, you can understand certain things and you can't understand other things. Therefore, why not purify the consciousness? Our envy of Krishna is so ingrained that we don't even want to see how he's materially maintaining us. What to think, what to speak of accepting his personal pastimes, we don't even want to accept his cosmic material maintenance. Because as I said, as soon as you accept that someone's maintaining you, that means you are dependent. Stalin had a very nice policy based on that understanding. He said, here's what you do if you want to control a whole nation as vast as Russia. Just bring all the citizens to the point of starving, and then you control the food supply. You are their maintainer. You are the source of life for them. So that's how to rule. Just make them starve, and then you show up with the food supply, and they can only get your food from you. You know the example Prabhupada would quote about how during the days when communist and socialist propaganda was intense, people were told, go to the church and pray for bread, and they come out with nothing. Okay. Go to the politicians and ask for bread, and many truckloads of bread show up. So I actually, when I was during the communist days in Europe, I was traveling in former Czechoslovakia, and Krishna Shetra and I, we were driving past a big building, and there was a huge mural on the side of the building, and indeed, that's what the mural was showing. That people would go to the church and pray for bread, and then come out and wait, and nothing would happen. And then they would go to their Communist Party headquarters and pray for bread, and 20 truckloads of bread were there waiting for them. So, this is for real. This envy. Whether you have the envy the communist way or the capitalist way, it's still envy. How are we going to clean up that envy? Let's consider the case of Hiranyakashipu, because Lord Nrisimhadeva's appearance day is soon approaching. He performed such austerities that his body was golden. He achieved such power that he controlled the functions of nature. The earth would provide food, minerals, herbs, just out of fear of Hiranyakashipu. All the principal demigods were under his control, except Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. The saintly persons and sages, even Narada Muni, had to apparently, externally, kowtow to Hiranyakashipu. He took over the throne of Indra. He took over the heavenly planets. He actually presented himself as the supreme maintainer. In spite of having so much power, he was completely dissatisfied. So Srila Prabhupada presents Hiranyakashipu as the prime example of dissatisfaction in contemporary materialistic society. Just like Prahlad Maharaj is the prime example of a bhakta, he remembers Krishna in all circumstances. Hiranyakashipu is the prime example of how you can have it all and still not be happy. Why? He was the servant of his senses. Therefore, he could never be truly happy in spite of such vast power. In spite of opportunities for sense gratification that we can't conceive of. Still, he's dissatisfied. This is the lesson of Hiranyakashipu. So, his envy of Vishnu knew no bounds. In spite of having so much power, in spite of having performed such austerities, he still maintained this envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He took over the functions of nature. He was the supreme maintainer in his eyes. So this is his attitude is the logical extension of the small timer's envy against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hiranyakashipu is showing that envy in bright lights. He's doing us a service by showing us, by magnifying that envy, showing it how it proceeds to its logical conclusion. It's not that I'm just maintaining myself. It's not that I'm just maintaining my family. It's not that I'm just maintaining my nation or the global economy. I am maintaining the universe. In other words, don't be a small timer. Let's just talk about globalism. What about the whole universe? I am maintaining the whole universe. All this is the logical extension of the basic conditioned attitude of the conditioned soul. In spite of all these impediments, these super anarthas, quite dirty things in the heart, Krishna is always working to enlighten us with transcendental knowledge. So therefore he takes the form of a fish and swims through the waters of cosmic annihilation with great delight. And while he's doing that, he's enlightening his devotees to the core of their heart. They're advanced enough that they can hear the Lord speaking in their heart. The Lord speaks from without, as the Shastra, as his representatives, and the Lord speaks from within, as the Supersoul. Without the proper attitude, how can we hear? That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. If you have the right attitude, in other words, Krishna wants devotees with attitude. If you've got the right attitude, what is that right attitude? Priti, affection. Beyond performing devotional service because you have to, there is the stage of performing devotional service because you love to. You love to because you are so eager to share affection with the Supreme Beloved. So Krishna says, when you are constantly performing that devotional service with priti, then he personally instructs you how to go back to Godhead. Now, it is true, Krishna has instructed everyone in Bhagavad Gita. The Shastra says that by aiming his instructions at Arjuna, Krishna has instructed the whole world for all times and all places. So yes, when you open Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is personally talking to you. But Krishna will go, he'll do even better than that. He says, in other words, besides what I've spoken to you in Bhagavad Gita, I from within your heart, when you are performing devotional service with preeti, with affection, I from within your heart will give you customized instructions how to go back to Godhead. So how can we complain? Krishna is maintaining us materially. He's maintaining us spiritually. Yet, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, envious persons cannot see this, but a devotee, even though very humble, and even if uneducated, knows that behind all the activities of nature is the supreme hand of the supreme being. Attitude is all important. Therefore, our Krishna conscious process is geared to produce devotees with attitude, not just devotees who do things mechanically. It's true that if you engage in devotional service mechanically and stick to it, gradually you'll become purified and the natural desire to serve Krishna will arise. But why not accelerate the process? You accelerate the process, even if you're performing devotional service mechanically, by associating with those who love to serve Krishna. By associating with those who have zest and enthusiasm. Just like in material life, those who want to be enjoyers, they like to be around others who, as they say, have a lust for life. That's a very appropriate term, a lust for life. When you can remember in your unfortunate conditioned days, how you like to be around persons who were the life of the party and who had a lust for life, who were always pointing out new opportunities for sense gratification. Those were the cool persons. Those were the successful persons who could reveal newer, newer aspects, who could convince you that sense gratification was ever fresh. Actually, what does Lord Chaitanya say? He says, I'd rather live in a cage surrounded by fire than be around those kind of people. But we thought, wow, these are the great people. They make us feel good about life and they show us opportunities for hedonism and sense gratification that we never knew were there. And of course, if you're money mad, you want to be around other persons who are money mad. You become enthusiastic in their association. The same principle works in terms of devotee sangha. When you associate with devotees who just are determined to please Krishna in all circumstances, you become affected by their attitude and you start longing in your heart, when will I have that attitude? And Krishna, in your heart, he hears that desire and he works for you to attain that desire. That is Krishna's pleasure. As the super soul in your heart, he senses your desire, just like you can smell the fragrance of a flower. The desire is so subtle, like that fragrance. So Krishna can sense what may seem to you to be the smallest change in your attitude. But because Krishna is so eager for you to come back to him, even something that you might consider so small, just a sigh in Bhagavatam class, oh, if I could only be like that. Oh. So you may think, what's the big deal? We're full of so many sighs. We're full of so many longings. Maybe one fraction of a second in Bhagavatam class, we happen to get it right. And, oh, if I could only serve Krishna with a pure desire. But no, Krishna takes that to be immeasurably important. Oh, my devotee has sighed just for a fraction of a second, longing for pure devotional service. Krishna notes that down. That's what it means when The Shastra says that Krishna is more eager for you to go back to Godhead than you are. Now think about that. We're dealing with someone who is the supreme maintainer in the very least. And more importantly, someone who wants us to return to the spiritual world. And that person wants this much more than we desire to escape material existence and be reestablished in our eternal constitutional position.